Hi, this is Adrian, and welcome to the new episode of Do You MQ? Do You MQ is a podcast where we discuss enterprise messaging and interview IBM MQ experts to share their insights and knowledge on the vital role of message queuing in today's world. Today my guest is Matt Lemming, architect for IBM MQ for ZOS. And we will be talking about MQ9.3 on ZOS. Right, so let's start. Matt, what can you tell us about your role?
Right, okay. So, my role is SGSM for MQ on ZOS. So that means my main focus is on what should we be doing next on the product, what makes sense for us in terms of the set of things we can do. And there's so many things we can do in IBM with MQ, because there's keeping track with the platform, the Z platform itself. There's doing things with the rest of the MQ product. And then we work with a wide range of different ZOS middleware, and we need to do things with them. So it's kind of trying to decide from all those different requirements, plus the stuff we get from customers, about which individual thing to do. So it's kind of really, I guess that's basically a balancing act, which thing to do next with the resource we've got. And as well as all that stuff, it's also working with customers, understanding their challenges, and just really understanding what they want to do and where they're going next with their MQ environment.
So it's quite a bit of prioritization role. You know, you're given some resources and so many problems and things that you want to do, but you can do only a few of them.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's the same applies for MQ in general. There's just so many people use our product, which is great. We've been a big success over the years. But with that success comes a lot of requirements. Everyone's asking for something, and you know, sometimes those requirements all line up and everyone's asking for the same sort of thing, in which case that's an easy win in terms of choosing that. But when they kind of start getting a bit more fragmented, that's harder.
Yeah, then again, you can always make everyone happy. You need to decide what to go for.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that introduction. I think we should also touch a bit about what's ZOS at all, because probably most of the listeners know, but just in case someone is not sure or, you know, just has barely any idea.
Yep. Okay. That's a great question. And I think I tend to find that some people know and quite a lot don't. So ZOS is, it sounds like, it's an operating system, and it runs on the System Z hardware, which IBM provides. And System Z is basically a mainframe set of hardware. So really, really big machines. They're kind of about the same size of, in fact, taller than like a large American style fridge. And basically they're used by IBM's biggest and sort of middle-sized customers to run their core enterprise workloads. So they're often found in banks, insurance providers, airlines, things like that. And then literally they bet their business on that. So that's where all of their core systems of records, their database, all the information about their customers, all of the bank account information, they're holding those mainframes. And then they run middleware to reliably process the data in the databases and do things with it. So really, ZOS is this operating system that's critical to many, many large many, many businesses. And almost certainly, even though very few of us will do day-to-day things themselves on ZOS, but anytime you go near a bank, chances are you're driving workload through ZOS somewhere in a data center in the world.
So ZOS is like the biggest share you can get of IBM equipment. So in case of MQ, you have like distributed cloud, then you would go for appliance probably. And then if you really need a lot of workload and critical stuff, you'd go for ZOS.
I think that's a fair way of looking at it. And the Z hardware and the ZOS operating system, the Z, people always ask, what's the Z stand for? And that's zero downtime. So the hardware is designed to be incredibly resilient. It's very, very hard, to take down the Z box. So they've got multiple redundant power supplies, redundant cooling, redundant chips. So if a chip goes, you can hot swap to a spare dark chip, and that'll start up and carry on where you were. So they're very, very resilient, which is why you use it if you really care about the workloads you're running and making sure nothing goes wrong.
I'm sure we could record a whole episode talking about ZOS, but we are here to focus on MQ,
yep,
aren't we? So what are the main differences between MQ on ZOS and other options that we have for MQ?
Okay, so before we go into the differences, I think I'd kind of like to flip the question around and focus on the similarities. So the main benefit of of MQ in general is it's kind of the same API, right? You've got a standard set of APIs for doing messaging with MQ, and that's the same. You know, those APIs apply to MQ on ZOS and MQ on distributed. And so actually there's lots and lots of similarities. It's all messaging. It's just the form factor you're doing the messaging with. So most things are the same in terms of what you would do from an admin or an API perspective. The differences come in terms of really the interaction of MQ on ZOS with the operating system. So it looks like a ZOS thing. And if you've got experience with ZOS, then MQ on ZOS just kind of fits in that model. So installation's different, monitoring is different. We do it in a mainframe centric way using something called SMF. And then kind of the big difference, and always the most interesting thing to talk about, is the way we do resilience. So we have something called a queue sharing group, which is the way you can have a set of queue managers working together to share their data in a queue that they can all access, which means that if any of those queue managers ever fail, if something happens and they get shut down or the machine goes, then the other queue managers can carry on processing and still access the same data. And that is not available at all on distributed. We don't have anything like that. I mean, we have uniform clusters, which is about having a set of collaborating queue managers, but they each have their own set of data. They each have their own messages. With shared queues, you have a set of collaborating queue managers working on the same set of messages, and that's kind of quite a significant difference.
Yeah, so we could say that on distributed, you have queue manager, and every queue manager has its own storage. And yeah. ZOS, using the queue sharing groups, you can have multiple queue manager connected to one storage.
Yeah, it's effectively that. And the storage is in this ZOS specific thing called a coupling facility, which is kind of like another running operating system where you can manipulate data in memory, and that's how we kind of achieve this shared queue idea.
Right. So my another question, since MQ 9.3 got released not so long ago, are there any new features for ZOS or improvements that happened in 9.3?
Yep, there's loads. And again, coming back to the fact that the product moves forward pretty much in lockstep, a lot of the things we've done in 9.3.0 on MQ for ZOS are also available in MQ for distributed. So for example, we've got streaming queues that was added in one of the CD releases on distributed, and we made it available for ZOS as part of 9.3.0. And again, that's kind of like a nice cross-platform capability. We've enabled things for the messaging REST API. Again, that's cross-platform. And we've done some ZOS-specific things as well. So we've been focusing on improving our monitoring support, which is that SMF stuff I was talking about earlier. And in particular, we've been focusing on kind of enabling it to better work with machine learning environments. So lots of customers on ZOS have been doing things with machine learning where they take this SMF data, which is basically statistics, and they kind of take that statistics data out, feed it into machine learning, and build a model for what's normal for their environment. And they do that for Kix and MQ and things like that. And they were already doing this. It's just there was a few sort of rough edges we've been trying to iron out. So that's part of the function we've put in 9.3.0, making it easier to get machine learning data about what's going on with your queue manager. So you can kind of monitor it, understand what's normal. And then if something starts to go wrong, if you imagine like a queue starts getting deep, which is normally a sign that someone's not taking data off it, then you can alert someone, say, this is unusual for this queue. You should go and do something about it.
Right. So just a quick question. You mentioned monitoring. So a bit of a sideline, but would you say that ZOS gives you much more ability for monitoring, or is it like exact same as the distributed MQ?
It's kind of similar. I think things are done in different ways. So on ZOS, everything emits these SMF records, and that's used as a whole cross-platform approach to monitoring. And therefore, the tools are generally the same sort of thing. You know, once you've got used to one set of SMF data, another set doesn't look that different. Distributed MQ have the same sort of monitoring data. It's just done in quite different ways. So on distributed, you get PCF data, which is information in the form of a message about what's going on in MQ. And then they also have this idea of system topics, which is another way of getting data out of your queue manager. And we don't have those on ZOS, but at the end of the day, it's still the same sort of data. So I guess the answer is same data, just accessible in a different way that makes, you know, sense for mainframe or distributed.
Yeah, different format.
Yeah.
So is any of those formats easier to work with? I probably, if you work on ZOS, you would say, yeah, ZOS is easier, and distributed, you would say that distributed is easier.
I'm sure there's an element of that, but actually, at the end of all of it, these things, even though they might be generated on ZOS or on distributed, they can often be put into the same sort of place, like Splunk. So, you know, whether it's SMF data or distributed MQ statistics, they can still end up in Splunk or time series database and see where things are going. So maybe the getting them out is different, and that the first bits of post-processing, but at the end of the day, you can still put them in the same place to go and visualize and work with them.
Yeah, so in the end, it's basically how you acquire it, how you need to pre-process it, but at the end of the day, it's the same data that you can use.
Yeah, or very, very close. You know, there's always a few things that's slightly different.
Yeah, obviously, the infrastructure is different, so you can't have exactly everything the same. Right, so we covered the new features. And I was wondering, right, so you briefly mentioned that, you know, big corporations that want to have resilient zero downtime go for ZOS, but if I ask you, you know, directly, who is the MQ target for ZOS? Like, who buys it, who uses, and why do they prefer it over, let's say, stack of appliances other options?
Okay, so that's another good question. So I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that, you know, MQ's really there for its applications, and it needs to run near where its applications are. So if you're looking at the ZOS case, then we have customers write their applications in Kix or IMS, or maybe they write standalone applications and run them in something like WebSphere, and they all run on ZOS. And if they want to then go and communicate amongst themselves or communicate off-platform asynchronously, then they kind of need to send their message data into a nearby MQ. And that's what that's what MQ for ZOS is. If there was no need to do asynchronous messaging on the mainframe, I don't think MQ for ZOS would exist. But lots and lots of customers do that, and that's kind of the reason why it's there. And in fact, for some of those environments, things like Kix or IMS, they can only talk to a local queue manager. So that's another reason. They're designed to be really, really fast. So Kix transaction executes in maybe a small number of milliseconds, and you don't want to be sending messages out to a distributed MQ and having that network hop. Instead, what you want to do is offload your messages into a queue manager that's right next to you, which is incredibly fast, and then move on. So you kind of keep your infrastructure or your middleware and your messaging quite close. And then the longer hop off to, you know, a distributed environment somewhere to do something outside the mainframe, that happens asynchronously in its own time frame.
Right. So if I'm getting it right, it's the reason and main advantage is so you can put a lot of application on ZOS, and then because they are in the same infrastructure and platform, they communicate really fast and you don't really wait for them.
Yeah. But then if you need to go outside the mainframe, then MQ does that for you, and it's just standard MQ. That's the value of, you know, the whole value of it in the first place.
All right. Well, that's a bit of a standard question here. So what's your favorite MQ feature?
Yeah. So I was thinking about this and what to say, and I realized in the past when I've been asked this question, I've given one answer, but today I'm going to give you a different one. And I'm going to kind of come back to those queue sharing groups, because the queue sharing group concept is kind of a thing that only exists on ZOS, and it is just so resilient. It is really, really hard to have a total outage of a queue sharing group, because it requires so many failures to happen at the same time. You have to take out all of your queue managers, or you have to do something quite significant to the infrastructure of multiple ZOS boxes. Sorry, Z boxes to kind of get a failure in it. And I just think that's cool. It's incredibly interesting as to how that resilience works. And yeah, I just think it's great.
Is it your favorite feature from overall MQ or just ZOS MQ?
It has to be overall MQ, I think.
Yeah. Well, you're the first person to say something else than uniform clusters.
well, okay, so I mean, uniform clusters is basic. A uniform cluster is quite similar to a queue sharing group in its own way, apart from queue sharing groups have been around for 20 years, whereas uniform clusters are relatively recent. And really, you know, they kind of do pretty much the same things, with the difference is that in a queue sharing group, there's only one copy of the data of the messages, and they're shared amongst the queue managers, which makes it really simple. So they're basically similar. It's just with a slight difference.
Yeah, I actually have a question, right? So, because in the queue sharing group, you have a lot of queue managers, right?
Right.
But you have like one storage. So mm-hmm. what if something happens to the storage?
So
isn't it like a single point of failure?
So that's a good question. So there's kind of several bits to that. The first thing is that the storage itself is literally an isolated thing. So you don't get applications running in it. And that kind of makes it resilient by itself. So like it's very unlikely that it internally fails in any way. And the second part to that is that the hardware it runs on is very resilient. And then there's built-in replication as well. So you can do mirroring of your coupling facilities, which is where the storage is held, so that if MQ is working with you know, one coupling facility and that coupling facility fails, we can dynamically switch over to a backup copy, a bit like how replicated data queue managers work with synchronously replicating their data on distributed. So you could view it as a single point of failure, but there's technologies that the Z platform provides to replicate the data if you want. And then as well as that, which kind of gets rid of the single point of failure, we also have built-in recovery mechanisms to go and rebuild the data. So if there is a power outage, say for the coupling facility, that would go down. The queue managers can automatically detect that the coupling facility has gone away and we'll rebuild it on the fly from the available data. So you know.
A lot of backup sense.
Yeah, it's, like I say, it's really, really hard to take down a queue sharing group.
So we're still on the topic of taking down the queue sharing group. Would you say it would be easier to take the storage or take all the queues?
I don't think it's easy to do any of it, really. I mean, the times, if something does happen, it's normally that someone's gone and disconnected the network. Someone's done something at the network layer or done something silly like remove power for an extended period of time. It's very rare that it's an unexpected problem. So when I've been talking to customers about this sort of topic, you know, I often ask, have you ever had a failure of one of these structures? And they generally say, no, we've never had a failure. The only time we've ever had anything even like that is when we've deliberately tested it. So, you know, over 10, 20 years of running, they never have an issue apart from when they deliberately cause an issue to see how does everything work.
Wow, that sounds great. So basically, Zoss seems like the kind of impenetrable fortress. Just once you put something, it runs perfectly fine, unless, of course, you cut like the supplies like power.
Yeah.
But I think even then, some of us have like backup power.
So, yeah. So it's changed a bit as the hardware generations move on, but normally there's at least several redundant power backups. So if one goes, you're fine, you can carry on. If another one goes, you're still fine. And then you can also buy, you know, batteries that you kind of plug in as well, so that if the power goes, you can kind of carry on for a little blip, or at least do a nice clean shutdown in the worst case.
So technically, with enough specialized tool and resources, you could keep Zoss running, even if everything is on fire around it.
Yeah, so there have been videos which have been shown in the past, and I think these are from Japan, where they've had a significant earthquake. And the data center's obviously taken the brunt of that earthquake, and all the Z machines have fallen over, and you can kind of go in there and they're all lying on their side, but they just carrying on running and everything's still working. And of course, it's not a single data environment. A single data center environment. You don't just have it in one place. Instead, you have a nearby data center, sort of maybe 10 kilometers away, which is part of that environment as well. So to take the whole thing out, you have to take out the primary data center, the secondary data center, and then of course we do asynchronous replication off, you know, somewhere much more distant in case of real significant disasters.
Wow, then that sounds great. Well, there's one more question that I would like to ask. What feature would you like to see in the future in MQ?
Okay, so I can't talk about futures in terms of things that we've got on the immediate backlog, but there are a set of things that I think we should be doing more work on, and I would like to do more work on, and that's really around the range of different messaging APIs we have. So while there's a core set of common APIs between distributed MQ and MQ on ZOS, so we've all got JMS, we've got C APIs, and
all the big players.
All those sorts of things, and we've got Assembler and COBOL and all that sort of ZOS stuff. We've kind of started to diversify a bit more on distributed. So we've got Node APIs and we've got Golang APIs, and we don't have those on ZOS at the moment. We do have a Python API that was added last year, and that's an open source Python API, which is now available both on distributed and ZOS. But I'd really like to make us kind of cross-platform in terms of APIs. So like when you use Golang on Z, which is an actual thing that exists, it just works, and you don't have to say, well, actually, that's not available on ZOS, which I always think is a shame.
Yeah. So basically, to match the level of APIs the distributor has.
Yeah, and actually come and look at them across the board, because the challenge, again, this comes back to that prioritization stuff we were talking at the beginning. There are so many environments where you can do messaging from, or you have that need to do messaging, and just making sure we have an API for all those different environments is important, I think, but it's also quite challenging, and trying to make sure we've plugged the important gaps is key, I think.
Is there anything like, let's throw the resources requirements, you know, what's possible and what's not, a thing like a feature, even if it's like in the really distant future, that you would like to see, you know, like instant messages traveling or something like that? If it was possible, right, what would you say? It's like, yeah, I want that, if you could choose one of them.
Well, instant messages would be interesting, because you'd be surprised how often people get caught out by the speed of light. You know, it's just, we can't do anything about that.
At least for now.
Well, yeah, at least for now, but maybe for quite a long time. I think it would be interesting to do some more stuff with AI and in terms of making queue managers a bit more autonomic as to how they tune, because, you know, it takes quite a lot of effort and skills to really tune a queue manager, whether that's on distributed or ZOS. I mean, they work fine, right? They're fast as they are, but some customers, they really want it to go fast, and often they want it to go very fast in a short period of time. Like, you know, if it's a bank or a trader, that open market open period at 9 a.m. in the morning,
you
want to be really, really fast for those, and it might just be for 5 minutes. Right. So if the system can learn how it behaves in those 5 minutes and self-tune itself and self-adjust for those 5 minutes, it would be great. And, you know, and often what you see is the workload's quite different. For those 5 minutes, you'll be doing things in a particular pattern, but that's quite different to what you need for the rest of the day. And if you can make the system itself go and adjust from one to the other, that would be really awesome. Whereas today, it's kind of, you kind of have to adjust it yourself, and you have to understand it, which is always the tricky bit.
I think the AI management of the queues is probably going to come at some point. Yeah, certainly more likely than, you know, instant messages. At least looking at it right now.
Yeah, and you know, ZOS has done quite a lot already with AI, but they're always kind of external things. So, you know, kind of bringing that closer, making it really understand how things work and do it very, very fast would be I think it's going to be a hard problem to solve, but I think it would be an interesting one to solve. And I think it'd be really valuable to all our customers.
Well, Matt, thanks a lot for showing up and having this great talk. Hopefully we'll see each other soon again.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening, and look out for more podcasts on our website on doumq.com.